SEN's Summer Breakfast Club with Andrew Mays and Bryce McGain.
And tell you what, Bryce, one of the best things about doing breakfast radio is the fact that you can watch pretty much all the golf on a Monday morning Australian time while you're on air and keep tabs, and we love to keep our audience updated on what is happening, and I hope you enjoy it as listeners as well. And jumping off the page on Monday morning was Matt Jones, who was storming home in the Sony Open, jumped way up the leaderboard in the final round. It's always good fun when that happens to an Aussie. He joins us on the line now, Australian golfer Matt Jones. Matt, good morning to you.
Morning, fellas. How are you going?
We're going well, mate. How enjoyable was that last round in the Sony Open? Because obviously you were hitting some nice form.
Yeah, the weekend was great. I think it's 7-under, 6-under on the weekend, so it was good to be able to jump up and get the year off to a good start.
Well, in terms of the year as well, because we do have the wraparound season on the PGA Tour, what do you do over the Christmas break? Do you reset, or you're still in sort of tournament mode because it is a wraparound season?
It's an interesting one with the wraparound season now. I didn't play Cancun, so I had 3 weeks off from when I played the Island, week off, and then didn't play Cancun, and then I had another 1 or 2 weeks off, and then I got back into it. So, I mean, I've been busy practicing. I had a week off over the Christmas break with the family and everything, but I always try to keep. I had three or four weeks off of not touching a golf club, and then I just got straight back into it.
Now, in terms of your results so far in this 2021 season, which of course did start late last year, you finished in the top 25 three times out of your 8 events played, compared to last year where you played 23 events and finished in the top 25 4 times. So you've got off to a fantastic start. How important is it to hold this form for as long as you can, and how hard is that as a golfer on the best golf tour in the world?
It's anytime you play well, it's always good, and it always breeds confidence. I mean, last week you'd always want it to be better, but I mean, I think I've started to find some form here, especially with my chipping and my putting, which I do rely on a lot of. And I hit it well last week, and I mean, I'm going to try and build on it. I mean, of course, my goal is to win. We finished top 30 in the FedEx Cup, but I mean, I think I'm starting to get back to the form that I used to have when I was a few years ago when I was playing really well. So I think I should be in for a good year.
And is part of that, Matt, the ability to have a bit of a refresher and recharge and maybe mentally play the game and rehearse those type of things rather than just hitting balls all the time? Has that been a good refresher over Christmas?
That's to get away from golf and forget about golf, always huge for me. And I actually seem to play well when I do that. Coming back to Australia for those Australian Opens, I don't really touch a club until I get back to the golf course for that week, and I seem to play well when I get back there. But, I mean, I'm 40 now, I'll be 41 this year, and I've been doing this for a long time, so my body starts to break down a little easier now, so I can't sit on the range and beat balls like I used to.
It was interesting talking about that. We were talking about Tom Brady a little earlier on and his success at such a late age compared to most other athletes. Now, I mean, I still think of you as about 28 years of age, and same with Adam Scott. I feel like he's been 30 for about 15 years. when you're approaching this age as a golfer, do you think that the gym programs and the way golfers are built now and your sort of physical regime will hold you in good stead to be able to play well into your 40s at that elite level?
I do. I think for me personally, I think golf. Golfers can't try and get too big. You need to be mobile and flexible. I think that's the most important aspect of golf, not big and muscly. Range of motion is huge for golf. I spoke to Jason Day about this, and he said if he could go back again and do it all again, he would not try and put on the weight that he did. I think there'd be a few guys that would say the same thing. I think our frames are built for a certain size, and some of those guys go over and above it. That can cause injuries.
Look, it's interesting you say that, Matt, and I suppose at 40 you know what works and what doesn't, and being able to be fresh in the mind is obviously performing really well and helping you perform really well. Now, what's the next tournament? Do you head to Southern California for the Desert Classic?
I'm actually on the range right now watching the guys hit balls, getting ready to start practice and prepping.
What's it like on the range? Tell us about that, Matt. Do you get to talk to many people? Do coaches talk to each other? Who's there with you in these COVID situations? How does that all work at the moment?
On the run, watching Kevin Na hit balls right now. He's over there, last week's winner, and there's a lot of coaches out here with their players. I mean, unfortunately, it's very difficult for my coach to come over from Australia, so Gary will be, I'm not sure when he'll be over next. He's allowed to come over, but having to do a two-week hotel quarantine doesn't sound like so much fun when he gets back to Australia, so I'm not sure when I'll see him next, but I mean, Brooks is out here hitting balls, and there's plenty of guys out here hitting balls, and it's pretty quiet and empty compared to normal, but there's still plenty of people out here.
Has COVID had an impact to the golf tour and how you get around and how you interact with each other and probably how you interact with the crowds as well?
It's affected the crowds since we don't have any, but as for speaking to players and caddies and coaches, no. The biggest part would probably be access to equipment and having the guys from the trailers bring us down clubs and all other companies and golf balls and everything. We don't have as easy access to that stuff now that we used to. Everything's got to be sanitized. Everything's got to be handed off to someone else, then we can take it from them. So I'd say that would be the only difference. But as for interacting with players and caddies and coaches, no, nothing's really changed.
Matt, you mentioned Kevin Na. Now, he is famous, of course, for hitting the ball in the hole, but then walking to pick up his ball before it's actually dropped. Now, I don't know if you noticed his shirt on the weekend, but he actually had an image of himself bending down to pick the ball up printed on his T-shirt. Has he had any feedback from any of the other golfers regarding that?
Not that I know of. I didn't even know he did that. I had that on his shirt, so... I'm looking at him now. I can't see it on his shirt right now, but no, I didn't hear. I haven't heard anything about that.
You've got to check it out. It's. I'll tell you what. He's loving a bit of his own work on his own shirt as well.
He's not afraid.
No, he's not at all. you talk about confidence. You talk about self-awareness and building up to these tournaments. What do you do to get away from golf, Matt? In between and at the moment, how much can you do?
There's not a lot. I mean, especially here in California, you can't really do anything. I like having, I've got three young kids now, so when they're on the road, that makes life a lot easier for me to be able to get away and forget about golf. But it's tough. Golf is really all I do a lot of. I'm constantly thinking about golf and working on ways to get better. I'll go back to my hotel room, I'll swing, I'll putt, I'll chip. It's always on the back of my mind of trying to improve and get better and be able to compete better out here. But to get away from it, I mean, I used to love going to movies and stuff like that. It was great last week to be able to go to the beach. That's what I do miss. And growing up in Sydney, we always went to the beach and always went swimming and had fun. But I live in Arizona now. We don't really have access to a beach, so it makes it tough.
In the pool, maybe with the family. How do you manage that with the three kids? Do they get on the tour and they, you know, if you're in golf mode in the middle of a tournament, do you want them staying with you and being there? Because I'd imagine it'd be quite a distraction, but it could be a refreshing distraction as well.
Ever since I've had kids, they've always, when they've been on the road, we'll do two rooms, but I'm always up with them. I don't sleep very well anyway, so having the kids doesn't really affect my sleep. It's a good way for me to forget about golf and get away from it from a good round or a bad round. It's just more enjoyable to be able to have them with me. I mean, they're always smiling and fun, so it makes golf seem pretty easy when you come home to them.
It is cool.
Matt, all the best this week. Very much looking forward to watching you on our TV as we did last Monday, hopefully competing in that final round. Good luck and thanks for the time.
Thanks, fellas. No worries.
Good on you, Matt.
Matt Jones there talking to us from On the Range. That was fantastic. North Melbourne have had plenty of change, Bryce. What? How do you think they'll go in 2021?
Well,
what sort of season is this going to be for the Roos?
Well, good question. I think not many people know, but they have had a lot of change. And sometimes that can be good. That can be refreshing for the ones that are there, like Luke McDonald, the current reigning best and fairest. That it could be excellent that there are new faces around and energising. A number have moved on, so look, it's going to be interesting to see how they go. But a new coach, that's going to have a big influence and bring some good experience as well. And I think that's what they need, that real strategic view, not just Yeah, not necessarily just coaching, but the bigger picture, and really take these boys on a journey.
Yeah, one of those players who'll be hoping to do so is Aiden Corr, who's come across from the Giants and now finds himself at Arden Street. The North Melbourne defender joins us on the line. Aiden, good morning to you.
Morning, lads.
How's pre-season tracking along for you? At a new club, fresh faces, fresh coach. How's it all feeling?
Yeah, it's good. It is, like you said, it's very fresh. Obviously, the programming's all pretty similar wherever you go, really, I find. But, it's been good. Just learning, just getting to know everyone, you know, getting everyone's feel, the physios and all the doctors and the way we do things at Arden Street is obviously there's little tweaks to the way it was at the Giants. But just finding my feet and but really enjoying it.
What's the biggest difference you've found so far in the pre-seasons between the two clubs?
Oh, maybe the weather. Oh, it was raining the other day. It's pretty hot up in Sydney most of the time. That's probably about it, really, at the moment. I'm just working on new things. Obviously, we've had the same coach at the Giants for pretty much the whole time I was there, so I pretty much knew what we were going to do rolling in. So I'm still learning all the new game plan and stuff and getting my head around that. So that's probably the biggest difference this year as well.
Aiden, is that a refresher for you? Are you a footy nut who really likes to get into that strategic stuff and know what's going on, or the less meetings, the better?
Yeah, a bit of both. I mean, you need structure, but I'm all about letting the boys play. They're all there for a reason. They wouldn't be there if they weren't good enough. So I think structure's good, and then to a point, and then let the boys make the big decision on field, which way we go with it. So, yeah, I think the likes of back in the day, I liked what Lockie Whitfield is whipping it, just getting to work. I probably need more structure in my game. So you need that balance, which is great.
You talk about the game plan and learning that. Just give our listeners a bit of an insight into pre-season. How much time would you spend, say, running and in the gym on a normal day as opposed to in the classroom trying to teach yourself or all the coaches trying to teach you the way you want to play?
Yeah, obviously, on tracks, significant amount of time in pre-season. You got your Monday, Wednesday, Fridays, you got a couple of hours on the track and then a few more hours after that in the gym and doing cross-training and whatnot. But there's usually an hour block most hours on most main days and actually on Tuesday as well of education. Mm-hmm. I think it's important not to do too much as well because you'll lose the room in terms of time-wise. So, you know, if we can break it up and get the boys intrigued the whole time, it's probably best to do it that way.
In terms of the impressions of the youngsters, who's left the greatest impression on you so far in the early parts of pre-season?
Yeah, it was widely documented that Fenix Weisser tore it apart the other day. It was, yeah. It was good to watch. Like Will Phillips, he's known for his contested ball inside work, but he came back and we love guys that come back and help at the back. He floated back and did chop out mark and went back with a fly training. That was super impressive. It left an impression on most of the backs, which we love.
Is that the most difficult part of joining a new organisation is just getting the feel for that sort of game sense and who moves where and who plays a certain way and what their strengths are? Is that the toughest part?
Yeah, that is tough. I've been working, obviously, at the backs, and I said, like, we were talking, and we said, like, you know, we got to learn each other's movements. And like, so it's not, you don't have to scream and yell at each other, it's just a look, a little wink or a head nod that you know what they're going to do. We're doing a lot of stuff at training now. It's hard, it's good now that we can get everyone together. Previously, we were in groups of 10.
Yeah.
So I didn't really get to meet all the boys, like, properly and sit down and have a good chat. But, no, it's a lot better now that we can all get together, especially the backs. And then we can get to work on what works best for us.
And do you think with so many new faces that everyone's really understanding of that, that the fact that it has been a bit of a challenge, so they're a bit more open rather than sort of drop in, then head home as quickly, you are actually spending a lot more time trying to connect and get to know each other?
Yeah, that's a good call. No, I definitely agree. And it's great for me because I'm not the only new guy. I was a bit worried about just rolling in and being the only fresh face. It's good. Obviously, there's so many of us, and obviously the coaching staff, so the boys have to get involved, whole new game plan. I'm not sure what the game plan was last year, what the go was, but everyone seems to be buying in. We've got all the older boys going in, they've got plenty to say in the meetings, which is great, and, you know, it's you see, like,
like they're really teaching the young boys, which is great to see. Obviously, they've got a bit to learn. They're really keen to learn. They're seeking the older boys out, which is great.
What conversations have you had with new coach David Noble, first of all, about your role, your place in the team, and your leadership as well with those youngsters, as you talk about?
Yeah, I haven't had a whole heap around that sort of stuff. We're just sort of finding our feet. I'm probably speaking a little bit more with John Blakey at the moment. I'm probably looking more at that deeper role. Me and Big Benny playing a deeper, whether I take small or tall, it doesn't really bother me. But just getting my body right. That's probably the main aim at the moment. It's still January. I keep telling the young boys that. It's still January, boys. Okay. So we've got a bit of time on our hands, so you get all that sorted. But at the moment, he said, just get yourself right.
Now, Aidan, I was reading that you were born in Northern Ireland. Is that true?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I moved over here when I was about 3 years old.
Right. So your parents from Ireland, or are they from Australia and were just living over there at the time?
No. Yeah, Mum was actually born in Scotland,
okay.
But Mum and Dad grew up in Ireland. Dad spent some time in England, but all siblings born in Ireland. My older ones were about 10 when they came over.
So when they came to Australia, obviously footy, completely foreign sport, but did they know of it with any knowledge over there in Ireland when they were living there, or was it just something that you were brought up on because you played it at school or whatever?
Yeah, no idea. Dad okay. jumped on the West Coast Eagles because one of my neighbours gave him a mug. We moved to Perth. he jumped on the Eagles. No idea, I think. Obviously, I was quite young, but my brother took it up. He was lucky enough to do like a one-on-one session with Jim Stein when he was a bit younger. And that's sort of where he fell in love with the game. And then being a younger brother, I sort of jumped on the bandwagon.
Oh, what a great story. And all the best for the rest of pre-season, mate. We're really looking forward to seeing what North Melbourne have to offer. Plenty of exciting times ahead for all North fans in 2021. And good luck for getting that body right for round one.
Beautiful. Thanks for having me, mate.
Just had to wait a year to try and get back to the Heights, where their season was abruptly ended last year. Nicola Stevens, Carlton AFLW player, and she joins us on the line on this Wednesday morning. Nicola, good morning and welcome to RSN 927.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for jumping on. Now, we'll get to Half in just a second. He normally sits in this very chair. But I did want to ask you about the year itself. Obviously, the Blues were flying this time last year, or a little bit later, towards the finals. But having that taken away from you, how much has it burnt in you since March last year to get back on the park and hopefully, for Carlton supporters, prove what you were wanting to in the final series last year?
Yeah, you're right. It was an absolutely disheartening experience for us to have our season ended so suddenly. But I think we hit our form at the right time. And, yeah, while it was a much bigger issue than just what it was in football, but I think we've been left with this little fire in our bellies to continue into season 2021. And we're just so excited that the time has finally come and we're able to play round one next week.
Nicola, what's been the impact to your pre-season and how have you gone through from the very start of it? Because we're hearing of, obviously, teams in Sydney getting relocated and it sounds a bit of a challenge. How's it impacted Carlton?
Yeah, I think GWS have been really lucky to be able to come together and still train mostly as a group. But for us, we sort of came back together, by ourselves to begin with. From September, we're all running around with GPSs. Back then, so we had to put in the hard yards quite early by ourselves, and that put us in a really good position when we came back together as a group in November. So we've been pretty lucky. We've had to navigate a few different policies and procedures and training in small groups, but all in all, I think it was really good that we were able to, you know, get to know our teammates a little bit better, the new girls, and work with your little line group and forward, mids and back. So it actually wasn't too bad, and we were just really be back to footy and back to doing what we love.
Nicola, what's been the biggest change in an AFLW pre-season from the first year in 2017 to now 2021?
I think now we're going into season five. Like every single year, like girls are just looking to get better and better. And while we're still part-time athletes, that, you know, you wouldn't even know it. Like the girls put in so much time and effort into getting better. And each year we're fitter. And, you know, our GPS numbers show us that and our high-performance staff show us that. And it's really exciting to see. We've got new young talent coming in that's just phenomenal. Like the young girls that have just come in to our side have just fit in so seamlessly, and they've got such elite skills and such a good fitness base already, and it's just so exciting for the next few years. Like it's going to be really, really cool to watch.
Nicola, are you noticing that? You mentioned the young girls there, that I guess the established skills, because they're playing in tournaments, all, well, competitions all the way through now from when they begin playing football, you're seeing that skill level be maybe higher than the generation previous?
Yeah, certainly. I think that's a huge standout. Like, these young kids are, you know, 18 years old, just finishing year 12. And if you look back from to when they were young kids, you know, they play footy for most of their life growing up, and it wasn't too different for them. And they've had a similar access to what the boys and men have had growing up from such a young age. So it's certainly starting to show now as these young kids come through. And I think it'll become even more apparent over the next sort of 5 to 7 years.
In terms of, I saw a video last night posted on the Carlton AFLW page with our very own Half doing his best work with a lot of the newbies. Now, tell us about a few of the introductions that you've had to some of the new girls, the new recruits, and also what roles we can expect them to play in this season.
Yeah, Mimi Hill's one of the young kids that have just come through. She's, yeah, fit in so well so far, jumped straight into the midfield, gets heaps of the footy. Yeah, she'll be an awesome one to watch. Charlotte Hammonds is another one that's jumped on board. A little bit older, not an 18-year-old kid, but she's come down from Queensland. She'll be playing in the forwards with us, and she's got elite skills and just really good composure. So she's another one to watch. And then there's a couple of others that will probably get a game maybe a little bit later in the season, but really looking forward to seeing their development and watching them over the next few years into the Carlton future.
We always like to get some goss on Half. Has he changed anything this pre-season?
He's pulled out some new flashy boots.
Oh, no.
But other than that, you might have to wait and see what's coming.
Oh, okay. I'm looking forward to this. He returns in a couple of weeks here, so we'll try and get some inside word next week. Just one last one, playing Collingwood next week, first game. How hard is it preparing for a lot of these teams have gone through a fair bit of change, and then obviously expansion coming in over the next few years means more and more teams perhaps. There's going to be more and more change. How hard is it to prepare for opposition in round one when we haven't seen a hell of a lot of them since March last year?
Yeah, it's been a long time. It's been 10 months since we've seen anyone play. So, and teams change every year. And I think, like, we had a round of practice matches on the weekend. And from all I've heard is that Collingwood played a really good game against North Melbourne. And I think we can expect things to be a little bit different for them this season. And it'll be a really competitive game. And, like, we're ready to take the challenge and really excited to be playing against them. But we'll look to prepare for them early next week and across the weekend this weekend. And, see what they can do and see what we can do. But, yeah, really looking forward to it.
Nicola, all the best next week. Looking forward to the return of the AFLW comp. All the best in Navy Blue in 2021.
Thank you very much. See you later.
Nicola Stevens there, Carlton AFLW player, joining us. Become a game changer in 2021. Carlton AFLW membership packages start at $50 for adults and $30 for juniors. 1-300-227-586 or head to carltonfc.com.au today. I'm sure that won't be the first time we've hearing that membership line plugged by our very, very own Daniel Harford, who we'll see return to action in the coach's box next week. A bit of AFLW news last night, which is quite big. It doesn't sound big on paper, but Ebony Marinoff, who's one of the gun midfielders at Adelaide, there was that sickening collision on the weekend. Now, she was actually sent straight to the tribunal last night. She pleaded not guilty, but the tribunal upheld the charge of engaging in forceful front-on contact. This is the one where Brid Stack, the Irish recruit for GWS, was stretched off and spent a night or two in hospital. She's been found guilty and suspended for 3 games, which is over a third of the season.
Mm.
That's a big whack. That's the equivalent of, you know, 7 or 8 games in the AFL world.
It is. So to describe it, for those that haven't seen it, it was a contested ball and front on with her arms flayed out, just looking to corral.
Yep.
And you mentioned the player with her head over the
Brit
ball.
Stack.
Yeah, yep. Brit Stack just bumped her head into, I guess it was the stomach area or thereabouts. So it wasn't necessarily a mean bump with intent and things like that. So there probably are grounds to challenge it. What do you think, Maisie?
Yeah, I think,
given the severity of it, it's a third of the season, so you've got to balance that up. That's like getting 7 games.
Yeah, I think they will challenge
in an AFL.
She's a Jet too. She's one of the best players. So I'll be interested to see what comes from the Crows today in terms of their challenge. Let's take a quick break. On the other side of this, we're going to chat to Bharat Sundaresan and just get a sense of how significant this win is and for India and from an Indian point of view. Epic win by India. Yes, they've been talking about it all morning, although we haven't really addressed the Indian side of things and how significant this is in the cricketing world. Bharat Sundaresan is a man who we've enjoyed the company of through this Australian summer, and he joins us one last time. The Indian cricket journalist himself for CricBuzz. You can read all his work there. Bharat, good morning to you.
Good morning. I don't know whether it's the next morning or we are still last night. Yeah, I haven't slept much, and I'm still trying to make sense of what we saw yesterday.
Now, tell us about the significance of this win for Indian cricket. Obviously, we were talking about from an Australian point of view. It seems as though this team seems to be the most resilient Indian team we've ever seen on our shores. What's been the reaction like, not only for Indian journalists in Australia, but also back home as well?
No, I think this is the greatest moment in Indian cricket history. I mean, this really tells you where Indian cricket is right now, how much it's grown. The fact that, a bunch of no-names in many ways, like who played at the Gabba Test, except a Pujara or a Rahane or a Rishabh Pant, guys who were not expected to even get a game from the nets to the match. The fact that they pulled off the big Gabba heist, and also they did it in very convincing fashion. It wasn't a sneaky win where they just got over the line. They dominated the fifth test play. I know India have won World Cups in the past, but they've done it with full-strength squads and full-strength teams. This is just something else. This is like a fairy tale that has come true, which, again, makes it the greatest moment ever.
Bharat, this is terrific to be catching up with you this morning. Obviously, the Indians have always had the skill and the ability, but this is another level again with the mental application. That's been the most impressive part from the Adelaide Test being bowled out for 36 and the bounce back that Ravi Shastri has said is the best of all time. That they must have done an enormous amount of work in mentally preparing this group for such an incredible series.
Oh, it's all about that self-belief. And Ravi Shastri is the man who's led it from behind the scenes because that's how he played his cricket. And he's always believed that if you want to win in Australia, you cannot take a backward step. Everything will be against you. All the odds will be stacked against you. You just have to keep pushing forward. And we saw that I think the Pujara innings yesterday summed up this whole summer for India. The fact that he was beaten and bruised and there was hardly a part of his body which hadn't been smashed into a few pieces. But he never flinched. He just kept batting, even though that one time it looked like his finger was broken. He still came back. And, you know, it took like a contentious LBW call to knock him out. Mm-hmm. And that really says like where Indian cricket is right now, like I said, which maybe it has a lot to do with the IPL. Nobody's overawed. And then you saw us, 21-year-old debutant hooking the best fast bowler in the world, nonchalantly, under pressure,
yep.
Two overs, tight overs, with that run rate picking up, and he just pulled it off. So there are just so many things you can look at. And Shubman Gill taking down Mitchell Stark, at the Gabba, bouncy Gabba, Stark, the scary fast bowler, young 21-year-old with no bat sticker, just smashing him around. All those will be moments that will be celebrated forever and forever. Like I said, we've never seen anything like this ever in Indian cricket history. And I think it was a great sporting moment. Like, it is one of the great comebacks in the world of sport.
One last one before we let you go, Bharat. Now, I wanted to ask about Ravi Shastri. He's someone who we've heard a little bit of, probably more than other coaches in the past who are touring here from India. But his emotion yesterday was amazing. For him to have tears in his eyes and recognise the moment. Just tell us about his impact. You mentioned it briefly, behind the scenes on this Indian team, and especially the youth in this Indian team.
Oh, he is more than just a father figure. He actually is a father to a lot of them. When Mohammad Siraj's father passed away and the news broke, he was the one who went, put his arm around him, gave him a big hug, and he said, "Your father's blessing is with you. You will play a test match. You will take 5 wickets." I mean, he's the greatest man manager India has had behind the scenes. And that's been his style of coaching, where he just it eliminates the fear of failure from all these young men, so that once they go there, they're just playing with that freedom, with the belief that, you know, I need to just put my best foot forward. Things happen. If not, I have someone backing me. And he's always been like that, even when it comes to facing the media. I've spent many an hour with him, and the same thing is what he says. He's like, as the coach, I will take the bullets when I go out. People can say what they want to about me, but I will not let anyone say anything about my boys or my team. And that that atmosphere is what has led to this incredible amount of self-belief and the fact that they can just come and overcome all odds, any challenge with whoever's left, which is what they did at the Gabba.
Absolutely, Bharat. Thanks so much for all your help from an Indian perspective this summer. It has been a wonderful insight. I'm going to miss that hair on TV as well. So good luck for the rest of the Australian summer and enjoy a little bit of a break.
Cheers. Now I'm going back to Adelaide and hopefully I can do the same with the Redbacks.
Bharat Sundaresan joining us there. Ryan Harris joins us on the line now. Ryan, good morning to you.
Good morning, guys. Sorry about that. It just dropped out.
That's all good. Not a problem at all. First of all, what do you think the biggest question for Australia is coming out of this test series? Is it the batsman, the bowling quartet, or is it a bit of both?
Oh, I could be biased, real biased here, so it's all the batters, but I won't. No, look, it's got to be a whole thing. It's got to be a team thing. Look, I'll start with the batters. I don't think we definitely didn't get enough runs. There are opportunities there for guys to really cement their futures, I guess. Well, not their futures, I shouldn't say that, but their you know, time in the team. Opportunities to go and make really big scores and make hundreds, and they probably didn't do that. And there were plenty of opportunities for that. And, you know, there's some guys in that, you know, that really didn't take that opportunity. Matthew Wade's probably one of them. You know, Marnus batted well. Yes, he made 100. You know, he was a bit inconsistent. Steve Smith is probably the most inconsistent we've seen our top order for the last couple of years. And the bowling, look, again, it was just, we just couldn't penetrate them. You know, we were talking after Adelaide, is it the best ever bowling attack that we've ever seen? Mm. I don't like saying ever, because there's been a lot of really good bowling attacks, but, you know, we're talking about a unit that couldn't take 20 wickets in 3 test matches, which is really unusual for this group. Now, I don't think the bowling was that bad in all the games, especially obviously the first game. What I do think is that India were just phenomenal. They were up for the fight. They were, you know, just for all the things that they went through on this tour, for them to come out yesterday and do what they did and chase that on the Gabba, that was just amazing. So, unbelievable. So, in answer to your question, it's going to be a whole team thing. They're going to have to, you know, reassess where they went wrong, or, you know, what they did well, what they didn't do well, and look at the plans that they had and their preparation. You know, it's been a tough preparation for everyone with all the, you know, the COVID stuff going on. So did they do it well enough?
Yeah, Rhino, there's going to be a lot of questions, and Justin Langer and the crew will be sifting through that from this morning. There's no doubt about that. Good to be catching up with you, however, and you've been across every ball up at the Gabba and the whole test series. One of the things that we discussed a little bit earlier this morning was the fact that in Sydney, maybe there was a bit of an indicator that this attack was maybe getting a bit weary, the Australian attack. They took only 7 wickets or 3 run-outs in the first innings and could only get 5 wickets in 131 overs. A couple of new balls in there and old balls and reverse swing. There was all opportunity to get the wickets. Do you think they could have done with a fresh bowler, but also just a different player, a different look in that attack, because it looked very, very similar and looked like the Indians had all the answers because they'd just faced it for the whole 4 tests?
Yeah, great to speak to you, mate, as well. Look, yes, the answer is yes, but there's a but.
Yeah.
I think I saw a comment from Justin Lang yesterday. All that, you know, yeah, I agree with that, exactly what you're saying, but you try and tell a Hazelwood, Stark or a Cummins, who, again, we've spoken about how good they are, coming to a sider at 1-1 at the Gabba, it would have been really, really tough to make a change, and because that was what we've spoke about during the week on a number of things, and, you know, it's with a few different people I have, and yep. You know, what about Nessa, and what about, I think if Pattinson had been fit, it may have been a little bit different. I don't think they were prepared to potentially give And they shouldn't have, because Michael Ness has been around that squad for a while now, and he's playing in his home ground. But I think if they had Pattinson, you know, a bit quicker, a bit more bounce, they may have taken it probably a bit more serious and potentially done that. But as I said just then, Justin Lang, I think, was spot on. We have probably got one of the best bowling attacks in the world. I know we haven't taken 20 wickets enough in the last couple of weeks, but again, coming into a side at decider at a ground that we hadn't lost at for a long, long time, which has you've got to pick them, and they would have assessed that. They would have checked with the bowlers. They would have made sure that they were feeling okay during that short period. They wouldn't have bowled much. So if there was any doubt there, they definitely would have made that change. But hindsight's a great thing. They definitely made that right decision. Well, looking at it now, they probably didn't. But going into it, they had to play those three.
Do you think our batting lineup relies too heavily on Steve Smith?
Marnus and Warner. I know Warner didn't fly yet in this game, but I think they do. They have done for a while. I think they've relied on Smith and Warner too much in the previous years. And then obviously Warner, Labuschagne's come to the party. But I think that's the problem at the moment. There's the number three, you know, one, three, and four. I think the only three that really sewn up. You know, five and six. Oh, probably Green. Look, he probably keep Green in there. I think he showed that he can handle it. Mm. He's got a lot to learn yet. Obviously, he's only playing his second test or third test. But you know, he got tied down a bit. Natarajan just tied him down and slowed the scoring rate. He's got to work out a way to get through that. But he will do that. So your number five spot there has got to be looked at. And who is it going to be? You know, is it going to be Wade? Is it going to be Head? Head got dropped again. He's averaging over 40. Or is there someone else now that's out and about that can do a better job there? So I think there's three that we rely on way too much.
Ryan, thanks for your time this morning and also throughout the Australian summer as well. Always great having you on RSN 927. Enjoy the rest of your summer up there in Brizzy.
Thanks, guys. Thank you very much.
Well, we're getting into must-win territory for the Adelaide Strikers and for plenty of teams who are mulling around the finals in the Big Bash. It is so close at the moment. The Perth Scorchers on 24 points in second position and only 4 points separating them and the Strikers in seventh. So it is going to be a real squeeze for these final spots. Wes Agar joins us from the Adelaide Strikers. Wes, good morning to you.
Good morning, boys. How are you going?
We're going well. Are you aware of the squeeze that's going on at the moment, or do you not look at the ladder? How do you sort of deal with the final stages of the BBL?
I think it's pretty hard not to see it at the moment. I watch every game, and you get told every game before the game about the bottleneck that's going on with the ladder. But I guess it makes things interesting and makes viewing exciting. So, yeah.
Wes, great to be catching up with you this morning. The Strikers sit in seventh spot, which generally would put your chin to your chest and your lip down. But a win on tomorrow against Brisbane Heat, who had a stinker last night, they fell in a hole, could see you go up equal second. Like and you could be in the running for a home final in that scenario. It's quite incredible. It's an incredible series. And do you think the Bash boost is adding some value because there is something to chase and a bit of an extra value to more than just the win?
Yeah, especially now. I think at the start of the season, I think the stats came out and told us that in the previous season, the Bash boost point only affected the bottom two teams. But in this season, it's so close that if you can get that Bash boost point, it can go a long way, like you said, to giving us a home final and cementing a spot in that top five or four.
And your form's been outstanding, Wes. You're fifth on the wicket takers, 17 wickets. In behind John Richardson, he's the one to track down on 21. What's been the secret to your good success?
Yeah, it's been a really good season. I think the secret for me is just my simplicity in my game. I've spoken before about how previously in 2020 you can get caught in the trap of thinking to change things up. But for me this year, I've tried to hold when I've thought that and try to be more simple. And I think that's held me in good stead to getting the success I have. Obviously, you need a stroke of luck every now and then, but no, I think it's the simplicity of my game and the simplicity of my thinking.
When do you prefer bowling, Wes, at the middle part of the innings or at the death? When's your favourite time to bowl in the Big Bash?
I think 2020 is really hard because they're going at you always. And I think if you're their target, there's no real easy time to bowl. Mm. I think for me, though, I like bowling the hard overs. I like getting given the overs to really get a chance to bring my team right into the game or bring my team back into the game. So as much as you can get hurt in it, I actually really enjoy bowling in the new surge.
Well, that is a serious challenge, and I suppose that also has a level of uncertainty of when that might be because it's the batting team calling that one. How far away is Peter Siddle with his thumb injury? You missed him last game, and it was probably his skill in the power surge and be able to close out the innings as well. Is he far away?
He shouldn't be too far away. I think we're hoping to have him back this game. He's been training in the Nets and he had a good field yesterday. So hopefully he can be back in the side for tomorrow night's clash. But yeah, like you said, in Melbourne, his expertise, especially under pressure as well for the other bowlers, was missed. And mate, we cannot wait to have him back in our side.
And those Sunnies as well. They haven't made an appearance for a few times. Hopefully we see them again as well. Wes, thanks so much for your time this morning. All the best in the latter part of the BBL. Certainly going to be an exciting finish.
No worries, guys. Thanks a lot for having me on today.
Wes Agar there joining us from the Adelaide Strikers, of course. Brother Ashton out for the entire BBL series with that calf injury. Yep. Wonder if he'll be right for international selection.
It's a big calf, a long calf.
Yes. Absolutely.
Not that it's necessarily physically a big calf, but he's lean in the legs, not like his brother. Wes is a different build than Ashton. But, wow, that's taken a long time to overcome that one.
RSN Summer Breakfast Club.